Thank you so much for being here and for selecting to come to this breakout session, and thank you so much for the invitation to attend the meeting today. So my name's Sarah, this is my colleague Rachel. We're here from IATSIS, and we'll tell you a little bit more about IATSIS in a second. And our course is about introducing our guide to selecting and evaluating resources, which you all have a copy of on your desk. So before I start, I'd like to pay my deep respect to the Ngunnawal people, who are the traditional owners of the land that we live, work and play on, and also like to pay my respect to any Aboriginal people in the room as well. So IATSIS, some of you might know the building. We're down on the lake next to the NMA, so that's the thing people tend to know about us, our building, and we're Australia's foremost government institution that is really interested in collecting and honouring and sharing the cultural heritage of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So I'll pass across to Rach to tell you guys a little bit more about our education team at IATSIS.
Thanks, Sarah. So this is us, the education team. We're a pretty new team. Sharon was kind of a bit of a lone wolf for a couple of years until the rest of us joined. But as it is, we've been maybe about a year altogether. We have primary training, secondary training, and a little bit of higher education as well. Most of our team is Aboriginal, so Sharon and Dan and myself. I'm a Wiradjuri woman from Narendra Nation, which is in Narendra, but I've grown up and lived here on Ngunnawal country my life. And then we also have Fiona and Sarah, who's with us today, and they're both white. So next up, we've got our learning intentions for today. So I'll just read over them really quickly, and then we'll touch back on the success criteria at the end of the workshop, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So our learning intentions are: we'll be introduced to the IATSIS guide to evaluating and selecting education resources. You'll learn how to evaluate and select appropriate resources to approach content with Indigenous and non-Indigenous students.
So before we start, we just wanted to spend a minute or so setting up some kind of norms and expectations for this workshop, so we can all get the most out of it and also all be culturally safe in this space. So we wanted to start by just emphasising, and I can already see we've got a good bunch here, but just to give the session your full focus. So if you need to take a phone call, just duck out, but try to put your phones away unless you really need it, because we've only got 45 minutes. Speak up if you have any questions or you'd like us to clarify anything. We've also got post-it notes on all the tables, so if you think of a question and we're kind of on another topic or in the middle of something, feel free to jot it down and we can come back and answer at the end as well. See this time as a time for learning. It's okay to make mistakes, but we're going to seek to kind of open up dialogue and respectfully correct people if inappropriate language is used and that sort of thing. So don't be concerned if someone gently corrects you, particularly around your word choice or concepts. We're doing this out of kindness because we want everyone to learn, and we think this is a really important topic. Some additional notes for any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who might be joining us today in this workshop. Some of the resources we're going to use later in the session might include references to community or family members who have passed away, so just wanted to let everyone know about that. For Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that might be in the room, there's going to be discussions in this workshop of colonisation and racism, so we want to flag that as well. For our Indigenous colleagues, we also want to acknowledge that you guys will have extensive knowledge on this topic that we're discussing today. So we trust you to take what you'd like from this kind of workshop, but we acknowledge some of the discussions, particularly around racism and colonisation, are going to be laborious for you, especially if we have to kind of wade into some of those tricky discussions. So I'm speaking as a non-Indigenous person here. We need to make sure this is kind of a culturally safe space for our colleagues that are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, And we have to ensure that we're not expecting our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander colleagues to teach us. They are putting in the effort to do the work for ourselves.
Thank you, sir. This workshop is about the IATSIS guide to evaluating and selecting education resources. It's about understanding and the underlying framework, unpacking the kinds of questions embedded in it, and practicing using it to evaluate education resources. So our guide was published in October of 2022, and it was in response to numerous requests and queries that the education team received to choosing resources. So it would be very convenient for us to provide you with a list that can go in every classroom and learning environment or library, which tells you what is a good resource and what is a culturally safe resource, but also providing ones that are bad or that are unsafe. However, that is not the reality, and it's probably not a very good idea either. So this guide instead seeks to equip you guys with informed decisions about resources and how to choose and bring them into the learning environment. So the purpose of the guide is to help educators critically self-reflect on their positionality, to support educators in working from a foundation of integrity, and to support that teaching, to ensure that teaching resource does not cause harm to Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander students, and to enable educators to select resources that foster trust and build a sense of pride for all. So fundamentally, it's important to remember that this is not a list of good or bad resources, but it does provide you with a framework that you'll be able to use and alongside your professional judgment to evaluate and select education resources. So, when we talk about being safe, this is what we mean, cultural safety. The concept of cultural safety comes out of healthcare. So, namely, it was a group of Māori midwives sought to describe the systemic shift that was required in nursing to reduce barriers to accessing healthcare and to ensure that women could receive midwifery support without encountering racism or any detrimental impact based on their cultural identity. So the key ideas to grasp here is that access to healthcare, just like education, is a universal right, and that cultural safety would ensure that people have access in a way that is culturally safe. So cultural safety differs from concepts such as cultural awareness or cultural sensitivity, which focus on a level of knowledge or understanding of the practitioner, whereas cultural safety focuses on the person who is accessing that service. So it's importantly, it's about the impact, pretty much, on the person that's receiving the service, and not the intention of the person providing the service. So in education, we would say that it's about the student being able to access education without having to be concerned about racism or about content being delivered in a way that is culturally insensitive or traumatic. And it's not about how much the teacher knows, and it's not about what their intentions are. It is about the experience of the student.
Thanks, Rach. Okay, so now we're going to dive in and have a look at our guide. So everyone should have a copy on their desk. If you don't, there's a couple floating around on the back table. So this spiral-like diagram is what we call the IATSIS Resource Evaluation Framework, which we're going to introduce you to today. So it's on page 5 of your booklet. We're going to start at the centre, and as you can see, the centre is based on integrity and critical self-reflection. So critical self-reflection requires educators, particularly non-Indigenous educators, to consider their pedagogical practice and where they stand in relation to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander related curriculum content that they teach. And it's about asking yourself questions like, what is my racial and cultural heritage, and how does this influence how I experience the world? in what ways do my students' racial and cultural identities influence how they experience the world? And what is the contextual nature of race, racism, and culture in my classroom or learning environment, my school or education facility, and also my broader community? So critical self-reflection, as you can see from this framework, sits at the foundation of everything. And we're also going to look at the other parts of the spiral, which are participation, production, and positioning. But it's essential that educators reflect on themselves, their own identities, and their roles within the education institutions and systems first before thinking about anything on the outside. So to make this a bit clearer and give you guys a chance to talk a little bit, we're going to do our first activity, which is around this centre of critical self-reflection. So this workshop, as you all know, is about selecting and evaluating curriculum resources, but we've strayed into this topic of critical self-reflection. This might not have been the topic you're expecting to be considering when you came to this workshop, but our understanding of our own identities and how they influence our experiences of the world are crucial to how we think about bringing content relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, histories and cultures into our learning environments. So let's start with a short activity to unpack this a bit more. So you can do this by yourself, you can do this in pairs, however you'd like to do this. What we want you guys to do is have a think about this reflection question. What is my racial and cultural heritage? And how does this influence how I experience the world? And when we're talking about racial and cultural identity, we're not talking about nationality. I assume that most of us, if not all in this room, our nationality is Australian. We're talking about your racial and cultural identity. So there's some post-its on your tables, and I'd like everyone to grab one. And we're going to get you to finish this sentence. Understanding my own cultural identity impacts my resource selection because. Rach and I were having a go at this before. It's not super easy, but we want everyone just to have a go at finishing that sentence and jotting it down on a post-it note. Yes?
Hi, I haven't brought a pen. Oh, which okay. I thought I had.
We've got a couple of pens floating around. Thanks. Yes. So grab a post-it note and we're trying to finish this sentence. Understanding my own cultural identity impacts my resource selection because... dot, dot, dot.
Thank you.
And have a chat with your partner if you want to bounce some ideas off them. We'll give you a couple of minutes. Okay, thank you to all the people that came and shared, and also thank you just as much to the people that took the time to have a conversation or jot something down at their table. So we won't have time to go through them all, but I just wanted to kind of highlight some things that jumped out at me as really important and kind of really good thinking in this space already. So someone's talked about how understanding their own cultural and racial identity helps them to unpack their own unconscious racial biases. And I think that's really important to think about. The way understanding yourself allows you to do that work of thinking, what assumptions do I have about other cultural and racial identities, and how might this impact how I select resources in a classroom setting? We have some other good points around here about understanding your own cultural identity is the only cultural identity that exists. So I don't know the racial identities of people up here, but some of these suggest that you might be part of the dominant culture, which in Australia is a white Anglo culture, and you're really aware that your experience of the world is something that's mirrored everywhere around you, and you have to be really conscious of understanding that that isn't the only way people see the world, and thinking about other cultural identities and how they might experience the world. I haven't had a sneak look at over here. A really good point about acknowledging historical kind of an ongoing impact of perhaps racism and colonization and how that can kind of come into the classroom. And also just the simple facts someone's put up here, I think is really important, that acknowledging you don't know everything and you don't understand every cultural experience. And just that simple fact can give you the awareness to go do that work when you need to. So thanks for everyone that's sharing, and we'll come back to that a little bit later as well.
Okay, so now we'll just unpack all of the bits around the outside of the framework. So the first one that we have is participation. And that is the role of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander in the development of content. So in your guides there, if you jump to page 9, there are some questions that educators can ask in relation to participation in any content that you pick up. I'm just going to whiz through these a little bit faster than I would, but please feel free, you get to take these ones home, read those questions in depth because they're very, very valuable. So the next one that we have is positioning. This focuses on the content and in particular how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are positioned in a resource. And this is a critical segment to focus on if you're seeking to ensure that content is not culturally unsafe. That's important. Also, it's important to understand the term of deficit discourse. And this is when people or groups are represented in terms of a deficiency or absence or lack or failure. For example, if a book speaks about health outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples with no reference to invasion or colonisation. This is a large section of the framework, and you'll get a chance to look during the next activity that we have to read more about this as well. And then finally, we have production. It's very common for educators to develop their own resources. This might be something such as producing an acknowledgement of country through the school or childcare centre. It could be a unit of work, or it could be resources that are co-designed and co-constructed with students as well. And this also applies, production also applies to any resource relating to Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander peoples, histories, cultures, and languages. And there's, I think that one is on page 10, I believe. Yeah. So depending on the size of a project, these points will be more or less crucial. The points all acknowledge that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander knowledges and cultures are not freely available for use in any and all classrooms without careful consideration and thought. However, it also highlights the value of working alongside local community and the importance of remunerating individuals or groups who do offer up their time and expertise to help.
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You've got your cheat sheets with you though. So we're about to look at some books and apply this framework to the books. So we went through the questions quite quickly, but I'm going to get Rach maybe to share one of the questions, one or two of the questions she thinks is most valuable to think about in relation to each of the sections. So in terms of participation, Rach, if you were thinking about that, what's one or two questions you think you would ask yourself when looking at a resource?
So for participation, I would say, is the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples acknowledged? So we know that there are over 250 language groups in Australia of Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander clans and nation groups. So is that diversity, is that diversity in the resource that we're looking at? Or is it kind of giving a sense of like one Indigenous culture, one Indigenous language, I guess? So
yeah,
that's probably my top one.
Yeah, so that's kind of moving away from like a homogenous understanding of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about for the next one? The next one is positioning. Yeah, what would be a question you'd be asking yourself?
Positioning, I would probably say the important one is about stereotyping and anything that shows racism pretty much in the resource. Yeah.
Yes. So we're thinking about that in relation to also production. if there's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people involved in the production, they might be able to pick up on that stereotyping and racism in a resource as well.
Yeah.
And then for production, Rach, was there one you liked there?
Production, well, a really major important one would be, have you sought advice from traditional custodians? To create the resources.
Awesome. Yes. So we just had a quick demonstration of Rach as an educator asking herself some questions about resources. So now we've got the opportunity to have a bit of a go at that together. So we've got about a little bit under 10 minutes to do this. And we've got a heap of books here, which I think Rach is going to start giving out to each table, maybe a couple. So in this activity, you're going to have the opportunity to practice using the guide to evaluate resources that you might use in your learning environment. So just wait till the resources are out, and then I'll explain what we're going to do. Okay, so before you start looking, I'm just going to explain what we're going to be doing. So what I want you, I'll just wait till everyone's listening so we're all on the same page. So when you're looking at the resources, I want you to ask yourself three questions. The first question I want you to ask yourself is, in what ways does this resource promote cultural safety? The second question I want you to ask is, in what ways does this resource potentially undermine cultural safety? And then if you have time, what further questions might you want answered before you are comfortable using this resource in a classroom? So remember that definition from cultural safety that Rach talked about at the start. So cultural safety, we mean when someone has access to a service, so education in this case, that does not cause cultural harm. In this case, we would mean Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people having access to education without cultural harm, but also for all students to have access to education without propagating cultural harm, such as through racism. So take some time, have a look through the resources, use your guide, and have a chat about cultural safety and the framework in relation to your books. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, so we might spend the next couple of minutes just sharing what each table came up with. So I'm going to start with the second question about resources that might undermine cultural safety. So these are resources that might cause cultural harm. And we said at the start there's not a good or bad list, but there is one book that I would safely, if there was a good or bad list, put on the bad list. So I might ask this table if they'd mind sharing a little bit about what they thought of this book called The Australia Book.
So I was very impressed by the fact that on the first page it does start with a reference to the first Australian. So that's pretty. That's
wild.
A good start. It then declines after that. Although they also do acknowledge that, not in that exact language, but that the first Australians were thriving or surviving on this land, like the land provided everything that they needed. So I think that's a bit of logic there. In terms of cultural safety and unsafety, we've got a whole swathe of things. We only needed to get through a couple of pages to see that. So a lot of negative stereotyping, lots of judgments based on race, and referring to Australia as a new country. So, yep. Minimising, particularly when it talks about Australian white settlers coming into the country, the colonisers arriving and actually coming to stay, it really minimises, doesn't even refer to any conflict aside from people waving a few spears and calling out from the clifftops. That's
a pretty good overview of that book, yeah. And I think you guys hit the nail on the head in the way that book is culturally unsafe. So the stereotyping misinterpretations, minimizations, all things we associate with resources that haven't engaged Indigenous people in the production, positioning, or participation of a resource. So really great, thank you. Anyone else have a resource that you thought was culturally unsafe or might have had elements that were culturally unsafe? Another one, yeah.
So I'm looking at this book, which is Eve is for Echidna, and the only referencing of Indigenous culture is in the actual artwork. There's no language other than on the very back cover it refers to, get my eyes on, it acknowledges the traditional owners. So, well, Hardy Grant, I don't know who that is, but there's no... So the publisher acknowledges the traditional owners. But again, there's not really, like you'd have to go and, oh, hold on, no, sorry, I missed this, a leading Indigenous artist. So actually, that's all totally fine. Culturally safe. But obviously, if it wasn't an Indigenous artist, and I was going to say you'd have to research to find out who the hell's given them license to use Indigenous style, you know, motifs and decoration. So
yeah, so that book was a part of the exam.
Yeah, yeah. So we made a bit tricky on that one, yeah.
To the box, because I gave them, they had the book and then I gave them the rest of the box, which has a bit more information on
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just missed that bit.
Yeah. And there's helpful interrogation there, because you can't just pick up a book and say, the author is Indigenous, it's culturally safe. You do need to do the work around it and think about, okay, how is positioning happening? How has the illustrator done something if it's different to the author? So just Indigenous participation is only one element of that spiral. It is something that generally contributes to cultural safety, but you have to do the work of thinking about production and positioning and do that critical self-reflection to ensure a book is culturally safe and also that it is used by an educator in a culturally safe way. So how about books that had elements or that you would consider culturally safe? And I might pick on this back table because I heard a really interesting discussion about pronunciation of Aboriginal language. If someone would be happy to share there, I thought it was a really good point.
I was just saying that often I get books that have various languages and I don't know the pronunciation.
Yeah.
So we were looking, I can't remember which book it was, but it's got a little glossary at the back and actually has how to pronounce words.
Yeah.
But we were just talking about how often we'll start kind of reading and then realise we don't know how to pronounce it and might need to like stop reading, do some research before we come back to it.
Yeah. Totally. And that's something I have to work on. Sometimes I'm lazy and I don't do the work of learning how to pronounce Aboriginal language I'm using, but that's a way of ensuring cultural safety to make sure you're doing that work.
Can I just ask a question on that? Because we had this discussion
with
one of the books here. A lot of times you can go into Google Translate.
Yeah.
And how reliable is that source?
Not that
reliable.
We
can't
reliable,
go to,
yeah.
directly to a person from that particular tribe to give us that pronunciation, that understanding. Where can we go to get it if we can't have that? So that's what I thought. I know with a lot of, you know, your nationalities, cultures, you're learning Italian or Greek or something, you just type it in and it spits it out for you. I don't know how reliable that would be. So respectful in that way.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rach.
It's a good question. Like I said before, there's over 250 languages. A lot of those languages, there was more, probably, we just lost them all.
Yes.
So when, as educators, we're looking at pronunciation and what the, what words we can see in books from them, a lot of nation groups don't know their language either. So, I mean, the best you can do is like you mentioned, go and speak to members of that community, send them an email, try and get in touch with them somehow, speak to your families. They might have some knowledge or connections, but ultimately I would say that if you're uncertain about a resource and you're not sure, that you're confident that this resource is going to be able to be used safely in the classroom, a general rule of thumb is don't use it at all. With more modern books, like, I mean, this one, the Luwatara Luwaiwa, and this one here, they're pretty modern, and they'll be, I would say, produced appropriately. That's a general statement, not true for everything, but usually you will be able to find, reach out to the publishers or to the authors to find that information. But if you're not confident in using something that you're worried it might be culturally unsafe, then I would steer around it, or even have discussions with your students and say, you can still use these resources, but what do they need to understand first in order for it to be used safely?
Because I was just going to say, if you can't pronounce the words or anything, you can still have it in within the environment for children to look at visuals.
Exactly.
About young children,
yeah.
And they can make up their own stories without being disrespectful, without being able to use the language.
Yeah.
Can I just say one extra thing on that? There are some language revitalization projects that are happening all over the country, and within those, depending on how they're funded and how strongly they're kind of being supported by other research methods such as universities and things like that, there are some websites that are owned by the traditional custodians of that language group that will have something like Google Translate in it, where you can type in the word and it will give a audio back to the correct pronunciation of the word as well.
So that's what I mean. You have to,
there are some, but you also
sure
have to,
the right one.
As, but also the most important part of that is going through relationship with people to make sure that it's safe to use that language, and also building relationships with the people within your community to kind of access that too.
Yeah, and a good thing about that book, at the back, is that you can actually scan a QR code and hear the author, David Goff, who's a Palawa guy, read it. And so you can hear him use the language as well. I'd love to hear from more tables, but we don't have a heap of time left. So just in the last minute, we just wanted to reiterate our success criteria, which was understanding a bit more about that critical self-reflection and having a first go at using the IATSIS guide for evaluating and selecting resources. So we probably don't have time to do a full wrap up, but we'd be really appreciative on the way out if you could scan this QR code, and maybe when you're walking to the next session or at the start of the next session, fill out this feedback form. It'll take you about a minute, but if anyone had a chance to just scan this on the way out, that would be super helpful for us, because this is one of the first times we've run this session. Thank you so much for your thoughtful kind of contributions, both to the bigger space and within the tables, and thank you for engaging in a generous manner with the material and putting in the work to engage with this really important space. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.